One of the heartbreaking and awesome things about the agency is every year we're leaving dozens of world-changing ideas on the cutting room floor because we get too many great ideas. Like, how awesome is it that you get to work at a place where there are so many world-changing ideas, you only get to do 20% of them?
This is All Quiet on the Second Front, a podcast where boring conversations around defense tech and national security come to die. Join me, Tyler Sweat, and my Second Front comrades as we dismantle the mundane, cut through the bureaucratic BS to demystify the world of defense tech. But be warned, this is not a typical government podcast. Ready to get weird? This is a Soulfire production.
All right, what's up, everybody? I'm your host, Tyler Sweat. Welcome to another episode of All Quiet on the Second Front, the podcast where boring defense talk comes to die. Really excited today. We're going to do a little mind bending and very fortunate to have Dr. Joe Altpeter with us from DARPA. I am not even going to attempt to sort of provide a little bit of an overview of what he's getting into, sort of what he's working on. But the only teaser is a little bit of quantum. Maybe we get to talk about some of the, Ant-Man and the Wasp and some of the stuff we're seeing in the movies now. But I'll open it up. Joe, thanks so much for spending a little bit of time with us. If you wouldn't mind, sort of give everybody just the who are you, sort of what are you working on at DARPA? What's that look like? So everyone kind of knows who we're talking to today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to meet you, Tyler, and really appreciate the invitation to be on the show. This should be a lot of fun. So my name's Joe. I work as a program manager in the Microsystems Technology Office at DARPA. And for a scientist like me, DARPA is really just the perfect playground. Like, I came out of academia where you work really hard on one project and become the world expert in some minutia of something. But it's hard to see how maybe 20 years from now that's going to change the world. DARPA is a place where if you have a credible idea about how to change the world and you want to go after it and put in the work, 9 months later, you can have four world expert institutions like Harvard and Lockheed Martin and like just the best of the best all trying to make it possible. And maybe it succeeds and maybe it fails spectacularly, but you really get to, like, it's not an expression. It's not something we're just saying. You really get a credible shot to change the world if you have a new insight about how to do it. And so right now, most of what I work on is quantum computing and how to think about that problem and get our head around, should we care about this? Is this going to change everything, or is this a distraction and we should really get back to trying to cure cancer? So that's my 30-second introduction to what I do and why.
That's awesome. And I think I can't remember if it's the Voices of DARPA podcast sort of where I heard this, but I heard a phrase that, you know, DARPA is one of these places where, like, if you don't invent the next internet, you sort of get a B. And it's just talking about, I think, the magnitude of problems you guys are going after and just the associated complexity around it. So what I wanted to sort of turn to first is, you know, we talked about coming from that sort of complexity. I think quantum is something that is oft talked about. And I think it's starting to make a turn that maybe it overtakes AI in terms of just being spoken about like it's magic, sort of pixie dust. We'll sprinkle some quantum on it. It'll solve the problem.
Definitely in terms of metric tons of hype, quantum can go toe to toe with anything you've got. I mean, we can represent
absolutely.
If that's the metric.
Yeah, right. But so, you know, take sort of all of the hype cycle off. When people are thinking about, or somebody brings up quantum, can you just distill that down? Like, how should they sort of frame that? And then, you know, as we think about that framing, turning that then on its head and thinking about, you know, different applications and sort of what potential impacts or outcomes could come from that to almost simplify the quantum sort of value chain or kill chain.
Yeah, I mean, so that's a great question. And there is not one single simple answer. And like you just said a sentence, which is, let's just take the hype out of it. Like, that is easy to say. But that is basically my whole job. Like, that is all they pay me to do right now, because everybody uses quantum to mean something different. And it includes the people who have spent their lifetimes like meticulously understanding the mathematics of this really obscure concept and know exactly what quantum mechanics means to them and can tell you why it's derived from something Heisenberg said 80 years ago. But there's a bunch of other people who say it and they just use it like pixie dust. They like, I want to make my thing sound sexier. Let's put some quantum in that. And everything in between. And one of the reasons it's so hard to like simplify this is, no kidding, no hype involved, this refers to 20 different fields, right? You can say quantum computing and really there's 10 different flavors of magic widget that maybe is going to make a new computer. You can say quantum sensing, and that's like 9 different technologies, which is arguably quantum. There's quantum communications, same story. So if I had to tie a bow around the whole thing, I would say that there is this field of physics that we call quantum mechanics, which is just surprising. It just, the more you learn about it, the more it gets under your skin and like, that cannot be true. Like, there's no way that it really works this way. And we keep trying to find more places to apply this to. And for the most part, when it works, and quantum is, no kidding, in the field, deployed, making a huge difference, we normally change the name. Like, chemistry is like that. Like, chemistry works the way it does because of quantum mechanics, but we don't call it like quantum molecules butting together. We have a whole new name for that field, and it's chemistry. And so that's really the goal, is to get out of the hype exploratory phase and make this into something where it gets its own field of science or engineering.
I like to think, and it's appropriate the way you frame that with, you know, as you're walking through or you're getting exposed to, you know, quantum mechanics, and sort of each iteration you go through, there's something in there. Mm-hmm. And I had, you know, years ago gotten a book that was supposed to be sort of like quantum mechanics for not quantum mechanics. And it was like wrapping my head around like the Z-axis and spin and all that. And I was like, oh, and then I like turned around, to your point, you could see applicability. And I was like, wait, this is what we were talking about in physics in college. Now I understand exactly why this behavior exists. I had just memorized a formula at school. I just extrapolated that.
Yeah. I mean, when you get down to brass tacks, the math isn't that bad. It's like multiplying and adding numbers together in specific ways. The consequences, though, things like, oh, well, maybe if you get down to such a like a nuts and bolts level, you can't actually copy information. You can just move it around, or measuring something fundamentally changes it. Or there's an unknowable number of permutations that come out of just a few atoms of stuff if you really pay attention to the details. I met my wife when I was in grad school. I've had the opportunity, both sober and at a bar, to try to explain quantum mechanics to her. And she's a genius, right? She's a pediatric gastroenterologist. And the same thing has happened a bunch of times of like, I'll try to explain what I'm working on, and this is how it works. This is how quantum mechanics works. And then she will believe she doesn't understand because she follows everything I say. She's like, oh yeah, I get it. But like, no, I don't understand because the consequences are so weird. She's just like, nope, I just don't get the math. And I think that's true of a lot of people, is that they think quantum mechanics is super hard because the consequences of those basic, super confusing rules are so alien to us that we're like, nah, I didn't get it. It's something else.
It pushes the boundaries of constructs that we've either intentionally or unintentionally built to sort of frame our perspectives of reality in the world. And to your point, when you start thinking about, you know, not just effect A or effect B, but sort of the compounding impact of those in totality, it gets a little big and hairy and maybe a little scary, depending on your viewpoint.
Well, I mean, that's why I guess I am an advocate for, try to push that aside. Try not to get impressed or intimidated by the word quantum, and immunize yourself to the hype. I will sometimes go to the doctor, right? I don't know anything about medicine, right? And so I'll have a checkup, and you meet a new doctor, and they're always like, tell me about yourself. What do you do? What's your thing? And I'm like, oh, I'm a quantum physicist. And they're like, ooh, I did not do well in quantum physics. I don't know. I have no idea. And for me, I'm like, I would like a doctor who's like, yep, no problem. That was too easy for me. That's why I went into medicine. I am going to really rock this appointment with you. And so that's my perspective on that. People should not be intimidated because medicine is so much harder than quantum mechanics. It's just confusing. It's not hard. The So what I would like people to do is don't focus on the confusing consequences of quantum, and instead think about, especially for the kind of listeners I imagine you have for your podcast, is don't ask what's the most useful thing this quantum widget can do for me, but just say, what is the capability I want to really be transformative in the field or in commercial industry or in academics? And does this list of technologies, some of which might be quantum and some might not be, fit the bill? Focus on the objective and how to quantify success, and then just measure the technologies. I think we've gotten to a place of super hype in quantum because people have been asking, how do I get a quantum computer or a quantum sensor or a quantum something that's twice as quantum next year as it was this year? And just assuming that's going to lead to magical capabilities down the line. And instead ask, let's assume all of this is fantastically successful. 10 years from now, 20 years from now, what is it you really hope to build? And why is that going to change the world? And really, my programs focus on trying to quantify that, that quest to get that kind of quantifiability of usefulness.
That's awesome. So, you know, pivoting off that, sort of the program, the quantification of usefulness, and thinking about, you know, the positioning of DARPA, maybe like a little bit more macro in all of these hard problems. And we'll use sort of this quantum sort of arc as a, maybe it's a proxy for all the different stuff DARPA's working on. Mm-hmm. But as we've got, you know, startups and venture capitalists and, you know, defense contractors and pure commercial companies alike sort of listening, how should they think about, like, when should they ever, you know, engage over? Because I know there's probably a whole bunch of, you know, founders who are like, my God, I don't have a brain big enough to go in there and talk to these folks. Like, I'm just working on this simple thing or that simple thing. Where does DARPA fit in now? Where does it want to fit in? You know, kind of that. What's that call to action if there was one?
Yeah, that's a great question. And this is really a bigger question. Forget quantum. This is about what is DARPA for and how do you engage? Yeah. And I love that question. So I've been in the building either as a contractor or as a government person since 2011. I love this place. Like, this is where you want to go to really change the world. And so my advice is, if you have an idea that you legitimately think could change the world for the better, especially, but not exclusively, if it overlaps with the defense space, then that is the right time to engage with DARPA. That doesn't mean it's going to work, but DARPA is designed to break the normal rules that are restricting us from making really fast progress in a way that breaks conventional assumptions. So I can give you, 100 examples of how it's worked in the past, but those are all just rules we're going to break if it makes sense to do something differently. So if you are a founder, you've got a small company, if you're just looking for a way to, you know, how do I get some funding from DARPA? Because we could use funding and DARPA has money. How do I make that happen? That is probably not going to work. Like, I'm sure you can get some meetings. It's not going to work out. The DARPA is pretty good at sensing that because we know everybody thinks of us as walking bags of money. But if you are like, look, the conventional, you know, tri-services or conventional big industry or whoever is not running with this, but if somebody would take this off, there is a 10% chance that this would blow a whole industry open. This would really change the world. Probably it's not going to work, but if it does, oh my goodness, the consequences. Yeah,
this will change everything.
You got to come talk to DARPA. And the way that you do that is, you know, there's a website and you just look up which 10 program managers, there's only like 100 of us total, in their one paragraph blurb on the website overlap with your idea. Email them all, like fill them all out, because everybody's got their own thing. It's a lot like a building where there's 100 different CEOs of their own little fiefdom, and everybody gets pre-fired after like 4 years. So it's always cycling. There are always new people. So there's no stovepipes. There's nobody who, there's no like quantum wedge where I just got to find the best way to spend my quantum money because DARPA has allocated. That is not how it works. Your idea that uses quantum that's going to change the world is competing against the guy who wants to build giant robots to win the next war, against the guy who wants to cure cancer, against the woman who has a new idea to break open artificial intelligence. And it's all on the same page.
That's such a cool way to think about like a playing field and sort of like, you know, if you think about the auditions, like, hey, who's going to be the next DARPA project?
Oh,
it's not like a set archetype. It's not sort of functionally oriented or segregated. Like, there is permeability, and it is an idea and maybe impact meritocracy.
Yes, absolutely. I would think about the impact. If you have a story that gets you to impact, we'd love you to be thinking about DARPA. We can't do everything, and there's always trade-offs. Like, one of the heartbreaking and awesome things about the agency is every year we're leaving dozens of world-changing ideas on the cutting room floor because we get too many great ideas. Like, how awesome is it that you get to work at a place where there are so many world-changing ideas, you only get to do 20% of them?
Yep.
So I would try, in the quickest way possible, send your one paragraph, send your one page write-up, try to get somebody in a room, explain, doesn't work, move on to the next opportunity, but like, definitely just take a shot. That one piece of advice, if I'm going to give you the like pro tip of how to be successful with DARPA, is you don't want to bring your super glossy slides that you would show VC funding agents. Like, one of the things about DARPA is we really do have rigor. Like, we keep technical experts on staff. We do our very best to recruit the best and brightest. And like, we want to see the crunchy details.
Yep.
Now, not in a 100-slide presentation that's going to put something to sleep, but your like tight Shark Tank presentation better have the technical argument and not just like the flash. That because it immediately turns.
Show me that
off.
It's real. Show me that you've thought through some of the dependencies of the relative complexity of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's really, really good advice, and something a lot of people probably, I'm sure, as you alluded to before, come wrong, and they come with some glossy, you know, like a marketing slick sheet, and you're like, all right, like I can't derive anything from this. Skip that. Yeah. Bring the actual abacuses out, right? Like, get the impact statement, and let's have that conversation.
Yeah, there was a I knew some guys, some like super awesome guys from an organization which I will not name to protect the innocent. But they worked for a giant famous hospital that you would recognize, right? And this is a team of engineers who had decades of success dealing with DARPA, and they had a standing policy that if they go to meet with a medical doctor at, you know, their famous hospital, you got to put on a suit and tie, because you want to be taken seriously, you better show up and look sharp. If you go to DARPA, you are required not to wear a tie, because they're not going to take you seriously if you look like a business development guy. Like, you have to look like you are a technical expert. And that, by and large, holds true. Like, if you just send your business development person to DARPA, you're probably not going to make any headway. You want to send the person who really believes and understands technically why this could really change the world.
That's awesome. So taking that, right? So let's assume, you know, we've talked kind of through quantum and demystifying some of the complex. We've talked through, you know, when to come to DARPA, sort of what that looks like, the focus on impact, sort of all that. Mm-hmm. So let's spin that into sort of what a next phase would be and say, okay, how does DARPA sort of engage with the rest of the defense community or the national security community? And when you get sort of one of those 10 percenters, what does that look like? Like, are services coming to the table and engaging with you guys and sort of getting buy-in? Do you guys just like solve cold fusion and lob it over the fence into the Pentagon and some PM over there catches it and goes? How's that all work?
Yeah. So this is a great question. So the magic word, the jargon inside DARPA for this is called transition, right? So we go and we try to find the world-changing ideas from, you know, you listeners, the genius inventors who have this. And then the first step is you got to figure out what, no kidding, it's going to take to make this work. And maybe you just need $100,000 in your garage to show that cold fusion works, or that, you know, you've got a totally new kind of radar or whatever. Sometimes that's the case. More often, if this is something that has been left lying on the table before, it takes a concerted effort to get that 10 or 20% chance of working, which means there's five different institutions. They're all working. Maybe they're working together, each tackling a piece of the puzzle. More often, they're probably competing against each other to see who really can make this work. But way before you get to the end of the line, the transition process starts. And so you've got to figure out, if I'm really going to change the world, we're serious about changing the world with these ideas. It's not just, okay, prove that this worked, publish a paper on it, maybe something will happen. It's, if it's going to change the world through the tri-services, you got to get the people whose lives are going to be impacted by this and get them to come to the table early. Because you don't want, you know, if I'm inventing something that's going to make the Navy SEALs' lives better or change SOCOM, how they do business day to day, you don't want a quantum physicist deciding what's good enough. You want me judging, is there a new quantum or physics idea that could help? And then you got to take it to them for testing and early insight into how is this going to make my life better. Maybe pieces of it have to be classified. Maybe pieces of it have to have a huge testing component that goes as you go along through prototypes before you get to the end. And that means there's no one size fits all, right? If this is supposed to make the Navy's life better, you got to talk to the Navy. If this is supposed to cure cancer, like, let's bring the NIH in. Let's bring in doctors. Let's figure out who are the actual experts who can take this and run with it. And, you know, economic security is national security. If the way we want to change the world is by transitioning something to the commercial space, so U.S. industry can make the world a better place using these ideas, let's get them here. If we need to get funding involved, we can, you know, we have a whole office that's designed to go and talk to VCs and tell them, hey, look, this is for real. You should pay attention to this. And if it's somebody who's not on the list of anyone we've worked with, you will not find a more receptive building in the government to throw the rule book out the window and go find whoever actually is supposed to be in the room as early as they need to be there to actually build a bridge across the valley of death and make this happen as soon as humanly possible.
I love the willingness, and you've seen it. I've seen it through a number of your answers to, hey, we're going to do the what we need to do for the impact we're trying to make, vice, hey, okay, this is process 1.3.5.7, execute. Yeah. And I think there's some real, real value in that. Last question, sort of more of a temporal framing. You know, when folks go out to private capital and they're raising money, they're asking, you know, what, how do you underwrite? Like, what are you thinking about? Mm-hmm. ROI, time horizon. So for DARPA, recognizing it's a little bit different, but thinking about sort of the ROI's impact, I've got a sneaking suspicion there's some time horizon that you're trying to underwrite to. And I guess my question is that the case? And if so, how does the potentially cyclical, not cyclical, the sort of shuffling nature of, you know, PMs at sort of a four-year window, and then the broader DoD personnel system, which about when somebody becomes an expert in what they're doing, they're sent away to go do something different and a new guy shows up. How do you reconcile across like a pretty fluid human capital environment there?
Yeah, definitely. So that's a great question. And the answer is that we want to work at all of those time horizons, right? Some ideas, we got to get, like, it's possible to get them out and have an impact a year later. Let's do it. Figure out how to make that happen. Sometimes it's a basic science idea where our goal is to invent a completely new field of science that is really going to have impacts 30 years later. And we got to do that. And no matter what it is, we want to bring a sense of urgency that is really having everybody sprinting on all cylinders to figure out, is this a thing? Or do we need to pivot and do a different thing? Because there are too many world-changing ideas to just keep going for the heck of it, which that is part of the beauty of the everybody having an expiration date. Like, you get here on day one, you're like, I have 4 years to change the world. Everyone in this building will support and sprint right next to me. And it's really true. Like, the support.
That's just an awesome way to frame that.
Oh yeah, like the janitors to the contracting officers to the lawyers, like to leadership, everybody is like, okay, you're here to change the world. What do you need? Let's go. But that expiration date that you have on your badge is a really powerful motivator, and it really holds people to account that, fine, you're making a change 30 years from now. What are you going to do in 4 years that shows that, yes, you've succeeded, you're on the path, you invented the internet of whatever your thing is. And then you take it somewhere else, right? You prove that it's possible. and you prove it to a standard that's going to have somebody else pick up and run with it. So if it's a new field of science, fine. Now there's seven new departments at top universities that are going to be founded. And decades from now, that we're going to earn the dividends of that. Or I get it in the hands of soldiers in the field in 2 years and everything in between. And the answer is not, there is no one size fits all, because it's, what do you need to change the world? Because that's your metric. Let's go.
That is an outstanding answer. And a very apt segue into the last question, which is the sort of structure question here of, you know, given the sort of breadth and the scale of everything you and DARPA talked about, the broader community, technological pace of change, societal paces of change, all of that. If you had your magic wand and you were king for a day, could change one thing, wave the wand and it changes. You don't have to caveat like, hey, there's a dependency, but intent will be realized as you intend for it to be. What would you change and why?
Yeah, so it's tempting. It's very tempting for me to give you a technological answer and use my one wish on a really big quantum computer or you know, another widget that I want to make happen or something that'll let me do that. But I really think as this conversation has allowed us to think a little bit about how DARPA works, I would use my wish on a very specific aspect of DARPA recruiting. So from when I was outside of DARPA, you know, I came from academia, but I think this is going to ring true to people who are in industry or in government, like all over. It's not clear how much the picture we've painted is really true, that you really can change the world. My wish would be to let the, you know, 100 or 1,000 people the PMs right now are trying to recruit to be the next generation of program managers and contractors who are going to help us change the world, to really let them understand the extent to which there is no net, there is no speed governor, like you can go as fast as you are able to go, to let them understand they really can change the world if they come here. Because that's the lifeblood of DARPA, is getting new people, a lot of them are geniuses. So this is a place that gives you imposter syndrome. You're like, how did I get here? Looking around at these people. But the biggest thing for success are the people who just want to change the world and want to work as hard as necessary to make that happen. I want more of those people to keep coming here. I don't know how I don't know if that structured the wish in the way to make it come true.
That's such a good answer. It's the second best answer you could have given. The first was going to be the suit from Ant-Man. And that was the layup. That would be so much fun. But I mean, all joking aside, I think it shows everybody listening, right, that you believe the words you're saying and DARPA believes the words you're saying. And it's not just like, hey, we can change the world. Gee golly willikers, come work here. Right, for that wish to be like, I wish the world could see the magic live so they would be more excited. Like, that's such a powerful wish. So thank you for that. I think that's probably one of the best answers we've got to that question yet. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it really is. If you're thinking about it, find somebody and make them get you an interview here, because
that's a hell of a call to action. And on that, you know, I'll thank everybody for tuning in. Joe, I think this was one of the most interesting conversations. And I know I've said it before, but I will continue to commend you on being able to take complex topics and break them down into like really consumable bite-sized snippets. It takes a degree of not just intellect, but just EQ to be able to do that. And I'm in awe of that ability. So thank you for sharing some of the time, taking time away from changing the world to come share a little bit with us in the audience, brother.
Well, I appreciate it, Tyler. Thank you very much for the invitation. It was a lot of fun. Cheers.
Heck yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. Wouldn't be a podcast without some show notes, so check them out to learn more about Second Front and what we're up to. Stay weird.